There we go.
Welcome to episode 3 of WP Dev Table. This is our third episode and we're lucky to have our first guest. So today we're talking about WordPress performance tuning. Our guest today is Gary Pendergast from Automattic. Firstly, if you're new to WP Dev Table, basically it's a roundtable discussion on tools, best practice, and most importantly, WordPress. So joining me today, I've got Jason Resnick, my co-host, and Gary Pendergast. So I'll let Jason introduce himself first, and then I'll have a bit of a chat to Gary and get him to introduce himself. So say hello, Jason.
Hello, Jason. How's it going, everybody? Welcome to episode 3. Again, we're trying to get this every month, so so far that's 3 in a row. So glad to be here, and glad to definitely have Gary on, and hopefully we'll be able to. This is a little bit more advanced, I guess. Maybe the 2-5% of the people out there, but this will be good.
Cool. So thanks, Jason. And next up, we have Gary. Say g'day, Gary, and let us know a little bit more about yourself and your background and where you work now.
Cool. So hi, everybody. I'm Gary Pendergast. I work for Automattic, the WordPress.com people. Though previously, I've worked at MySQL as a senior support engineer. So I saw a lot of big MySQL problems. Kind of got started with WordPress actually while I was on leave from that job and started writing some plugins and all that kind of thing. Started contracting for Automattic, and so here I am today.
Excellent. Fantastic. And what's your kind of day-to-day role involve while you work for Automattic, Gary?
Well, at the moment I'm working on O2, which some of you may have heard of. It's the replacement for the P2 theme, which is what up until recently, we used for all our internal communications in Automattic, and we know a lot of other people kind of relied on that kind of system. So we're getting pretty close to launching now, so it's that's pretty exciting. Though, I mean, being at Automattic, we switch around teams a lot. I previously worked on VideoPress, on the WordPress iOS app, worked a bit on likes and comments and all sorts of bits and pieces.
Awesome. It's a pretty exciting day-to-day role compared to a lot of other people out there. So if you want to work for Automattic, they're always hiring too, so we should plug that.
You may have heard that, yes, we are hiring.
Cool. All right, so first up, given Gary's experience, we're going to be talking a lot about web servers, your MySQL stacks, and what you can do about scaling. So first off, Jason, I'll ask you a bit about your standard set up in terms of web server. Are you using Nginx or Apache or both? And we'll go from there.
I'm using both right now. I'd like to move everybody over to Nginx, though. I guess I've been using Nginx for a year or so, I guess. Mm-hmm. Probably a little bit more. Maybe a year, closer to a year and a half. But then I got the legacy people on shared hosts or old VPSs or something like that that, you know, they just, they don't want to pony up the money or pony up the time to actually move them over. So, but Nginx for me is my standard development environment, PHP, FPM. So that's basically my stack, my go-to stack, I guess, I should say.
Cool. Yeah, it sounds, yours is pretty much exactly like my stack. I used to use Apache a lot, but obviously performance-wise, Nginx, fantastic compared to Apache. We've still got a few people when they want to do their own hosting run Apache, but I'll let Gary talk here about the main differences between Nginx and Apache and why we all love Nginx. So, Gary.
I think what we've found is that it's just so much easier for Nginx to blow Apache away in terms of performance. And certainly you can tune Apache. A talented Apache admin can do a pretty good job, but Nginx is kind of where it is for the massive scale stuff. Certainly you can start on Apache if that's what you're familiar with, but if you're creating a site that you imagine will get pretty big, then you start on Apache but plan to move to Nginx at some point. It's going to be necessary to keep things scaling up.
Cool. Excellent. So, yeah, once you've made the transition there, if you've started from Apache and moved to Nginx, the next stage, I guess, would be going into caching. So what kind of, like, early caching recommendations would you make, like quick wins for people who are getting a bit more traffic and starting to think about scaling?
I mean, a quick win that pretty much anyone can do is install something like WP Supercache, which will... It works by just writing static copies of pages or of parts of pages to disk, so that instead of having to hit the database, instead of having to load up PHP, it can just load up the file and send that straight to the user. Works great for sites that have a lot of users that aren't logged in. If you have a lot of casual readers and that kind of thing, then WP Supercache is a good option. Another thing worth investigating is an opcode cache. Something like APC is considered the standard for PHP opcode caches. The idea with that is that PHP, as you know, is written in, it's just stored in text. It's not compilable, but an opcode cache kind of caches that the compiled version of PHP, which is then run by the PHP process, so that can speed things up as well if you have, if you do have a lot of people hitting the PHP side of things.
Yeah, cool, excellent. Jason, in terms of your setup when your clients start to have scaling issues, what are your common things? I know I use WP Supercache quite a lot. If they're on a shared host or if they're on Engine, WP Engine, they do a lot of caching themselves, which we'll talk about more like detailed caching with Gary later on, and you'll get a bit of an idea of what WP Engine have running. But what kind of stuff do you have, Jason, in place when one of your clients starts to scale?
Yeah, usually like you, I've used Supercache before, but most of the time when it actually starts hitting that threshold, I kind of just say go to WP Engine. You know, they've been on like Bluehost or some other shared host, and then once they hit that level, I kind of say, okay, let's think about the host, where you're hosting, the type of environment and stuff. And WP Engine is great for all of that. Yep. So and because they do, their whole architecture is for that, for performance. So I've worked on other projects that that's fairly large, and WP Engine does an awesome job. So yeah. I've never actually really had to do my own tuning yet, you know, my own systems, but WP Engine's good. You know, I can't say anything bad about it.
Yeah, totally agree there, and this is the awesome thing we get, because we're lucky enough to have Gary on the show, we get to learn what you can actually do when you do get the opportunity to do your custom tuning yourself. So I guess the next thing... on our list of things to talk about are CDNs, because obviously once you get more traffic, the more you can offload off your server to other resources, the less stress your server's under, and it can obviously serve more visits and more requests. So CDNs are quite easy to put in place. We've used MaxCDN, Cloudflare's another one that people are using, but there's also a great free one that people can use that Gary's been working on with a part of the Jetpack team called Photon. So I might throw it over to you, Gary, and you can tell people about Photon and even the API and all the cool things they can do there if they want to use Photon for a CDN.
Sure. So Photon is an image CDN. It only caches your images, but it's installed for free. If you install Jetpack, the plugin we make, then you get Photon. And what that does is it takes a copy of any images that you upload to your site and distributes them on the WordPress.com CDN. So what you get, you have our entire global network. It's entirely free. We're not charging anyone. At some point we may look at charging like the top 0.01% or something, but that's certainly not coming anytime soon. And for the vast majority of people, will never ask a cent. So what it does is, of course, distributes the images, but it also we provide an API for resizing them, and there's a few little bits and pieces you can do with it. so that you're able to distribute your images in different sizes. It's great for like different size screens, mobile versus tablet versus computers. Kind of keeps things running smoothly, keeps things pushed as close to your visitors as possible.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, especially I think being able to serve the correct image to the right device, because that's a problem for me. When I've tried to solve that in the past, I've used things like Foundation 5 has Interchange, which will serve the different versions of the images. But once you get into there, obviously you've got to be pretty reasonable at writing your own filters and things to actually have, like, obviously you had use add image size and have various sizes there for your devices, but then you've got to run filters to make sure that the code that gets put out by Foundation 5 actually works. Whereas, yeah, with Photon, that's magical. You just basically activate it and it's done all that magic behind the scenes. So it's pretty incredible there. And it's obviously being free is incredible too. So if you don't want to write code and you want to use an awesome service, go click activate for Photon immediately.
So is that why to keep the cost down, is that why it's on images only? You don't want people uploading movies and whatnot?
It's something that we've found that not a lot of CDNs do well. Like your average CDN will do, it'll have pull requests, it'll be able to cache your JavaScript and your CSS and minify it and gzip and all that business. But we found that a lot of people really don't do images all that well, apart from your basic static requests. So we kind of wanted to provide that. And what we've really found is it's part of fitting in with our philosophy of if we do things that make the WordPress world as a whole better, it makes things better for us as well. If WordPress has a better reputation, then Automattic has a better reputation. It seems kind of a no-brainer for us.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. So the next thing we would like to talk about is MySQL, and this is where your past roles obviously give you a lot of experience here, Gary. Firstly, we'll talk about the different flavors of MySQL and your recommendations on your preferred flavor of MySQL and, yeah, your experience with them. So I'll throw it over to you.
So the three major flavors that you will have heard of is, of course, MySQL, which is distributed by Oracle, Percona, which is kind of, they've taken MySQL and applied a lot of their own custom performance patches to it. And then there's MariaDB, which is actually a full fork of MySQL. It's now entirely separate development tree. They do patch port patches back and forth between the two a little bit, but for the most part, it's fairly separate. So all three of them have their advantages and disadvantages. And using vanilla MySQL, of course, will get you all of the big new features from Oracle much quicker. Some of them are quite useful. Some of them are only really useful to the data warehousing and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But things like InnoDB upgrades, for example, are really good for just basic performance. Percona tends to follow fairly closely behind. They'll add their own performance patches, do their own testing, and then release. And then MariaDB have kind of gone off and done their own thing, and they are doing some quite interesting things. The upcoming MariaDB 10.0 is a big new release with a lot of performance features. I haven't actually done a lot of testing of it yet, but the people I've spoken to have said that it's shaping up really nicely, so it's definitely one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I know I've had a bit of a play around with MariaDB myself, and I was actually really impressed with, especially how simple it was to go from your standard MySQL to convert that into MariaDB. Like, it was really seamless, and I was quite surprised because I was a little bit paranoid thinking, oh, this is going to be difficult, I'm going to lose data, and it was really, really, it's quite smooth, so it was really good.
Absolutely. So all three of them do aim for binary compatibility at least, so all of your data files can be ported back and forth between the three.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Why did you switch, Bronson?
just to have a play because I'm a bit of a geek. It was after Gary's talk, because Gary did if you haven't seen it, he's done a talk. He did a talk in WordCamp at WordCamp Melbourne with the same title as the show today. And I hadn't tried MariaDB, so instantly, being the geek that I am, I'm like, well, Gary's talked about this, I've got to have a bit of a play. And yeah, that weekend I had a play, and yeah, I actually was really impressed with it. Quite fast too. I think it was faster than MySQL in my case, for the testing that I was doing. And yeah, it's actually pretty cool.
So did you switch your projects, your clients' projects over to that, or
didn't go that far? But yeah, just played with it more out of curiosity's sake. But yeah, it was really solid, and it looks like it's moving forward well. Do you know what the community input is like, Gary, for MariaDB compared to MySQL?
I think the MySQL community as a whole has struggled to get the kind of community traction that, say, WordPress has. Tends to be very much the vast majority of development work is done by the core teams that are employed by the various companies. There's very, very little that's done by outside contributors. There are a bunch of possible reasons for that, both technical, it's a very complex project to get into, and historical in terms of how well the MySQL engineering team has worked with external contributors. But I think it's getting better. I saw some statistics recently showing that it is improving over time, that more people are contributing from outside of the core companies.
Well, that's really good. That's good news. Yeah, technical. The technical stuff is the main reason that people wouldn't be touching this. And also, you obviously need really high traffic sites to actually start to worry about what's really under the hood here, and that's when most users like myself and Jason will go to WP Engine, not worry about it. Or if the client's got the cash, they might go to WordPress VIP, and we don't worry about this because there's only a few people that know what's going on, and they're the kind of guys that would have to contribute back, but they're too busy. So hopefully it keeps growing and we all get to benefit.
I've been seeing, like, I guess what's nice about it is I'm, we're all kind of like tech geeks here, so, I see WordPress not just, it's moving a lot more to more leading edge type stuff, more DevOps type stuff too. So, I don't know, just for me, that's nice, because then you get to take and play with, the core underpinnings of WordPress, which is nice.
Yeah, definitely agree. So some other things to talk about with MySQL. So what's the difference between MyISAM, I don't even know how you say it, and InnoDB, Gary?
All right, so MyISAM is one of the oldest engines in MySQL. So MySQL has the architecture where you can have different engines storing your data and driving the data access. So MyISAM is one of the oldest ones. InnoDB now is considered to be the standard. These days, in modern versions of MySQL, then MyISAM is really considered to be deprecated. I would imagine in the not too distant future that it will be officially deprecated, that people will be expected to move to InnoDB. Certainly in the past, there have been some features that MyISAM had that InnoDB hadn't. For example, full text search is a thing that InnoDB really only got. But by the same token, something like full-text search is better driven by a proper full-text search engine, like Elasticsearch, for example.
Yeah. Cool. So in terms of recommendations for people running fairly high traffic sites, would you recommend switching from MyISAM to InnoDB?
Absolutely. If you're not on InnoDB already, then you should be looking at switching. Naturally, depending upon your architecture, that will involve a little bit of downtime. It's a large table, can take 5 or 10 minutes to switch across. But again, that's really not a lot in the grand scheme of things. It's in the newer versions of MySQL, I think from 5.5 and above, InnoDB is the default storage engine. So if you've created a new site on a new WordPress site on MySQL 5.5 and above, then it will be InnoDB by default.
Right. Cool. Have you had a bit of a play around, Jason, with different storage engines?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much do everybody on iNoteDB. I switched maybe, 2 years ago, I guess. I kind of tinkered around and read up a lot of stuff, so that was, kind of like a no-brainer switch.
Yep. Cool. In terms of switching, I had a bit of a search in the repo just out of curiosity's sake to see if there was a plugin that would actually do this for you in WordPress, but there wasn't. Now, Gary, would you suggest that that's something that someone should look into writing or write myself? Or what are the risks there if it did do that?
It's actually something that I considered doing in the past, but the problem will be is supporting it. The actual process of switching to NAB for many people will be as simple as clicking a button. For some people, it will result in downtime. It could result in problems in switching. So generally speaking, I'd say that a plugin in the repo would not be fun to support. Certainly, I encourage people to switch to NAB if they have their if they have the ability to, if they know how to use the command line or know how to use phpMyAdmin, then it's worth them looking at it. But I would think that a plugin just within WordPress could result in problems.
Yeah, so with great power comes great responsibility, so we don't want to do it with a click of a plugin.
Exactly.
Cool. So do you have any insight into why Core hasn't updated to InnoDB by standard? Obviously, you said before, if you use MySQL 5.5, then you will get that out of the box. Any ideas why Core might be a little bit behind that?
I think we've always taken the approach that WordPress should create tables using whatever storage engine the MySQL admin has selected. So of course, as I said, 5.5 plus the default is InnoDB, but it's possible to define that earlier, or it's possible to change it around so 5.5 by default uses MyISAM. Now, I'm not entirely sure why you would do that, but we're not wild about the idea of overriding the system admin's wishes.
Yep, that makes sense.
On the flip side of that, back to the web server stuff, why are permalinks, why does it only generate the Apache one? Like, if you're using Nginx, why can't it, like, switch?
There's a ticket and core for that that's being discussed. So there's been some discussion about it. I know as soon as I started using Nginx, that was my first thing. Ooh, why isn't this in core? But, yeah, it's being discussed. It's had a little bit of movement there, but I think it's something that's becoming more important, obviously.
Yeah.
I know a little bit more.
It is becoming more important, and it's certainly something that some of the core folks are looking at. But one of the problems is that the nice URL part of WordPress's code is quite old and has a lot of dependencies. It's something that we don't really want to dive into and make huge changes without being able to do a lot of testing. A lot of making sure that it's not going to break any older sites and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, once I found out what that, like when I make a site container, that's just pulling in a template at this point. So I was just kind of curious.
Cool. So some other performance gains. What kind of things can you set in your MySQL config files, Gary, to help out with performance?
So, I assume that everyone switches to NAB. There's no good reason to not be switch. So, then you're looking at your biggest performance gain for NAB is a variable called NAB buffer pool size. What this does is it sets how much RAM NAB will use to cache your data. So, if you're running on a single server, then you probably want to aim for that to be set to about 40% of your system RAM. So it will just use a big chunk, but shouldn't run into clash with your web server. And if it has its own your own server, then you probably set it about 80%, because it'll be the biggest performance gain you'll get will be being able to fit your entire database into RAM.
Okay, cool.
Conversely, probably one of the biggest performance detriments that I've seen, especially with older servers that have been upgraded over time, is the query cache. Now, historically, the query cache was quite useful, but in modern systems with lots of queries being thrown at it, the query cache really doesn't keep up. It doesn't add anything, and can often be a performance detriment. So, for that, you need to set query cache size and query cache type to zero, and then restart the server, and that will completely disable the query cache, and so everything can just go straight to InnoDB.
That's awesome. Excellent tips there, and obviously we'll share these in the show notes too, so that people who are playing along at home can make sure they get these variables correct and get the settings correct. Have you played with any of this stuff, Jason?
Not too much. I've played with those settings on custom projects, not so much WordPress projects. Because like I said, once traffic and you know, performance started hindering some of the sites, I kind of just say, all right, let's move. You know, because it's always been from a shared host when, you know, on, you know, GoDaddy or Bluehost or something like that. And then it's just one of those things that I'm just like, okay, we need to, you know, think about where you're hosting this at this point. So I've never actually had to tweak settings. And that's not, I like playing with that stuff. I'm not so sure on, you know, the funnel into the business kind of thing. So unless I bring somebody else on board to handle all that. For the most part, you know, that's just stuff I've tinkered with, not really anything in production.
Yeah, that's fair enough too. I know for us, some of our corporate clients insist on having their internal IT staff host, because obviously they want the data in their own server. They want complete control over that. So given my experience, it's actually sometimes quite difficult for me to explain things like setting up duplicate databases and stuff like that. So this is where it's great to chat with Gary and find out how some of this stuff actually works and how you can go about setting that up. So there's a plugin in the repo which WordPress.com uses called HyperDB, and I know a few other major traffic sites use this. Now, in terms of that plugin, Gary, it obviously gives you the ability to stop scaling kind of up in terms of adding, like if you're on a cloud-based server, more RAM, more CPUs, things like that, and you're actually going to scale your stack and scale out. So let's say, for example, you're ready to start having multiple databases, Gary. What kind of recommendations or how would I go about doing that?
Well, certainly HyperDB is part of kind of the idea of having a cluster of servers serving a website. And as you said, the idea of at some point then scaling up is no longer helpful. If you're in a cloud-based thing where you just click a button and you get more RAM or more CPUs, you find that you get less and less breathing room with each upgrade. So instead you start adding more servers. You can add more web servers, add more database servers. So HyperDB is part of that. It's a plugin for WordPress that allows WordPress to talk to multiple MySQL servers. The concept of replication, the idea is that you have a master MySQL server, which it's considered to be the canonical copy of all of your data, and then that replicates it out to a slave server or to many slave servers, and all of those servers are read-only. So you set up HyperDB to say, okay, if you need to write to the database, then it all goes to the master. If you need to read from the database, then you can read from any of the slaves or from the master itself.
Cool. So, step one, you'd end up actually duplicating your master server completely, and then from there you'd start working with HyperDB, yeah? Is that correct?
Yeah, so you setting up replication itself, there are a million tutorials available on the web, just ask Google. And it's really just a case of taking a backup of your master server, or what will become your master server, creating a new MySQL server, using that backup, and you can configure the replication so that the two servers talk to each other.
Now, would you recommend using something like HyperDB, or would, I guess, step back. If you have a load balancer and you're controlling the traffic through the load balancer, would you recommend using that plugin or use the load balancer to kind of direct the traffic to the master instead?
So HyperDB kind of acts like a load balancer, from a load balancer between WordPress and between your MySQL servers. So generally what you'd have in a larger cluster environment, you'd have your load balancer at the front, which would direct traffic to one of your web servers in whatever fashion, and then those web servers would each have HyperDB installed with the same configuration and would talk to your MySQL servers. So what we have on WordPress.com, for example, we actually have this split across multiple data centers. So we tell web servers in one data center to talk to MySQL servers in that data center. And so there's no cross data center communication. You don't try and talk to a MySQL server that's the other side of the country or the other side of the world. So it's pretty powerful in terms of how you can configure it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I had a project a number of years back where we basically, it was kind of like a midnight blitz kind of thing. You know, they ran, it was on TV and stuff like that, and it was just for that one night. And we kind of, what we did was we pointed, we had the load balancer just basically say, it was just a basic brochure type site, and we had the load balancer point to the master for all the writes. So if anything came to like the form process, you know, for gravity forms, or, you know, WP admin or comments or something like that, then just went straight there. Everything else was read only, and we did that through the load balancer rather than, you know, I don't know how long HyperDB has been around, but that's kind of the solution that we ran.
Cool. Yeah, another one too, I guess I'll mention, you've got Google App Engine too for scaling here. It'll just automatically spin up new instances when traffic hits, but it's good to know, like, they keep their stuff behind closed doors, so no one knows how their calculations work, but it's pretty incredible for these kind of burst traffic sites as well, so it's another one to keep in mind. So there's obviously another few other things you can do, Gary, like you can use Memcache and Batcache, so I might get you to talk about those and how they kind of fall in the stack, sure. And so, how they can help.
So at the beginning, as I mentioned, you set up WP Supercache as kind of your basic caching system. But at some point, you're going to find that the disk access is going to be too slow. So what there is there's a service called Memcached, which is a really, really simple service, really, really fast service. It allocates a large chunk of memory, and it's basically a giant hash table. It's really, really fast at just grabbing lumps of data by a non-permanent key value store, as it were. Mm-hmm. There are two things that we use that for on WordPress.com is the object cache. Mm-hmm. So what that is if we grab some data from the database and we know that it's a mildly expensive query, then if it takes, say, 300 or 400 milliseconds to run that query, we don't want to be running that with every page load. So instead, we put that data into the object cache in Memcached, and instead it only takes 10 or 15 milliseconds to grab it out of there on future payloads. Then as a replacement for WP Supercache, we also have Batcache, which does the same thing. It has a static copy of the HTML, but it stores it in Memcached instead of storing it on the disk. So again, it's for when the disk gets overrun. It's much easier for the RAM to keep up with lots of simultaneous requests.
Cool. It's awesome. Yeah, and the only time I really had the chance to play with Batcache is when we were writing the Google App Engine plugin, because that was something, the most expensive process in terms of both performance and dollar values is when you're hitting the database. So we use Batcache there to store as much of the sites as we could in memory, because then essentially if you're serving the pages out of memory on their system, you don't pay anything. So pretty cool. So another thing, yeah, Varnish. I don't know much about Varnish, so I don't know. Jason, have you had an experience with Varnish? And
no, I haven't worked with that too much.
Cool. So Gary, tell us a little bit about that.
Varnish is pretty cool. It's kind of similar in some respects to Backcache, in that it stores a static copy of the page, but instead of being tightly bound into WordPress, it actually sits in front of your web servers. So if we imagine our cluster of servers, we have the load balancer, and then behind that we have the Varnish servers, and then behind that we have the web servers. So Varnish will store static copies of the content, and if it has, if it needs to flush or it doesn't have the right copy, then it will go back to the web servers to grab a fresh copy. So it's just yet another caching level. So you'll probably only you probably wouldn't use Varnish and Backcache at the same time. They're really kind of doubling up there, but it's tricky to set up than Backcache. You have to set up extra servers. It's not just a case of installing a plugin, but it can provide pretty huge performance benefits.
Cool. Awesome. So another thing you can do with databases is sharding a database. So Jason, have you ever sharded a database? Because I certainly haven't.
Yeah, I don't know about that. No, actually I haven't. I've heard about it. That's about it.
Cool. So I'll throw this one back to you, Gary, so we can learn about how we would go about doing this if we get the opportunity to.
All right. So sharding is the idea of splitting all of your data in some sort of logical pattern, so that you're able to say your data that matches pattern A to N goes on one cluster, matches N to Z goes on a different cluster. So in the case of WordPress.com, what we do is we shard by blog ID. Right. So we have a bunch of we have a bunch of sites on this cluster, we have a bunch of sites on this cluster, we have a bunch of sites on this cluster, so on and so forth. And what you really get to this when you, again, as we were saying earlier, the difference between scaling up and scaling out, when you need to scale out further, when you're finding that your entire data set won't fit on a single master, when you need to kind of split it into chunks. And again, this is the thing that HyperDB manages. You just tell it what the how your data is being split, and it will automatically direct the queries to the right cluster.
It's a pretty incredible plugin, HyperDB, like that it can do stuff like this. It's really powerful.
I'm gonna have to check that out.
Cool. So that's mostly I've got through all of our questions here. Now, I came up with one while we were talking that I'd like to ask you, Gary, and I'll ask you the same question too, Jason. So what's your ultimate stack, Gary? What's your dream stack?
My dream
Ferrari,
stack?
Lamborghini.
My WordPress.com.
Yeah. Yep, that's, you're allowed to.
I'm not going to lie, we have some pretty good sysadmins running all the hardware side of things. They do a great job of keeping it up and running so that us developers can try and break it. it's really a bit of a joy to develop on, so I can't say go past the .com stack.
Cool. I think you've told us pretty much most of the infrastructure behind that too and how it's set up. Are there any other little things that you can give away without giving away too much?
Oh, little things that we can give away. I don't know. I've kind of covered a lot of it. A lot of our things tend to be about when we're saying about scaling out, then we're scaling out to thousands of servers. So this is the kind of thing that you can talk about when you're turning into a huge host. And it's the same thing that a lot of the hosting companies will deal with their cloud services, all that kind of thing. The idea of having of trying to manage thousands of servers automatically.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, that gets a bit trickier, and it's actually a little bit outside of what I work on WordPress.com.
Yep. Cool. Well, I don't blame you for wanting that as a dream stack. .com is pretty incredible, and the work the guys do behind the scenes is amazing. What about you, Jason? What's your dream stack?
Any stack that all my clients are on. I just, you know, I mean, I go from different stacks all over the place, and this kind of goes into like some of the talks that we've had, Bronson, about, you know, just your own local dev environment. I would like to have that normal. You know, I said before, I have clients on Apache and PHP, MySQL. I have clients on Nginx, and, you know, just I would love everybody to be on the one. And if I can get all my clients to Nginx, you know, FPM, PHP, FPM, that would probably be, you know, my dream stack, I guess.
Yeah, cool. Now, if you got any more questions, Jason, that you can think of to ask Gary, I think we've covered most stuff. But
yeah, I think the only other question that I had, and we kind of briefly spoke about this, was the NoSQL type stuff, and why, I guess, you know, you kind of touched upon it before, you know, but I guess more of why not NoSQL, like that. You know, why is there no?
I think the NoSQL projects have made a name for themselves as being a really good object store, being able to store, especially being able to store based on key value ideas, which is a little bit different to how WordPress stores data. But even if we did convert it to work on a NoSQL database, I don't think it's really worth the effort. I think there are bigger wins. The vast majority of performance gains can be found outside of the database. Certainly for massive sites, you'll be able to tweak it to get, you know, 3% here or 8% there or whatever it happens to be. But your big wins, your 200% performance gains, your drop from 500 milliseconds to 200 millisecond page load will be by adding caching and by adding caching, adding object caching, adding the page caching, adding CDNs. These are the big wins. I don't really think that a NoSQL database is going to provide the kind of gains that people are after.
Yeah, so like some of the things you mentioned, like Varnish and Batcache, obviously look after this key value store. So, yeah, you're avoiding the database and serving out of there. So they're kind of doing what some of these flat file databases, if you, in quotes, kind of are doing now. So, yeah.
Cool.
Well, what's your dream stack, Bronson?
Anything that's consistent, pretty much like you said. So I love, WP Engine's great because I know that I'm familiar with their environment. I know how much you can scale, and I know if a client's going to go past that, then that's when I'd recommend like WordPress.com VIP to look after these kind of things. But yeah, basically I'm happy with WP Engine for the majority of our client sites. So yeah, it's familiar for me, and the consistency is good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and having obviously the right team behind these kind of hosting environments, once you know there's good knowledge there and trust, obviously that's why guys like you and I, Jason, don't need to worry about this kind of stuff too much, and we get to ask Gary these awesome questions and find out how things work behind the scenes.
And with that, Gary, where can people, I guess, reach out to you if they have any questions from the show?
I can be found on bento.net is my blog, and at Gary Pendergast on Twitter are the best places to reach me. I'll also, of course, when this show is posted, I'll hang out in the comments and answer any questions that people might have.
Great.
Excellent. Thanks so much for your time, Gary. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Cool. All right, so I guess that's a wrap. For episode 3 of WP Dev Table, we were originally going to do Hangouts 3 on development environments, but that's been postponed till episode 4. So, yeah, episode 4 we'll be talking about development environments and tools like Vagrant and Ansible. So that's what's coming up next. So, yeah, thanks, Jason, for your time, too. And, yeah, thanks again, Gary. It's fun.
Thank you.
Thanks again, guys.
Cool. All right.